Former Air ATAG, Commander of the Air National Guard. And now you work full-time as the Managing Director of Safety at Horizon Air. I'm Joe C. Mandel, and this is Raven Conversations. And today I'm joined by an extremely special guest. If you've been in the Washington Air National Guard, you definitely know who this individual is. Brigadier General retired Jeremy Java Horn. We'll get into why his nickname is Java eventually down the road here. Retired Air National Guardsman, former Air ATAG, Commander of the Air National Guard. And now you work full time as the Managing Director of Safety at Horizon Air. So appreciate you coming on, sir. It's truly an honor. So
it's great to be here. I was waiting for you to invite me. I mean, it's been years. So
it's been a few years since you've been out. Yeah. Intro and background yourself for those that don't know you.
Yeah, I had an awesome career. I joined the Air Force, went to the Air Force Academy at 17 back in 1985. Long before you were born, Joe.
No, I was born.
And then had 11 years on active duty after that. Got to fly the A-10 Warthog, best airplane in the world. Did a spin through the T-38 as an instructor pilot, but also spent 3 years here at Fort Lewis at the time. 2 years with 2nd Ranger Battalion as their air liaison officer. And then, did all the HUA stuff, jumped out of airplanes, went through Jump Master School. And then another year up at the 1st Corps office. And really kind of got that, I enjoyed getting dirty and going out in the field. So it was kind of nice being the air guy that I knew I was going to go back to the Air Force, but I really, really developed a taste for joint operations. I then went on to fly the A-10 for another 9 years in the reserves, but full time. I was an active duty stat, like our AGRs here.
Yeah.
And at our maintenance depot in Utah. And so I was kind of a crash test dummy. After heavy maintenance or modifications, or we'd do some weapons testing, things like that, I'd be the guy that would hop in and run the airplane. And then after that, I was going to retire. This was 2009. And, if you look back in your history, the economy was in the tank, and they had just raised the retirement age for airline pilots to 65, meaning there was this whole crop of pilots that thought they were going to have to retire, but didn't have to. And so nobody hired. And my wife was born and raised in Seattle. And she's like, I'm moving back to Seattle. You need to find a job. And fortunately, I had developed some really good friends in the Guard who were running the 111th ASOC at the time. People like John Tuohy and Jill Lannon and J.D. Dowling and those folks that I had kept in touch with over the years. And so when I said, hey, I'd like to come back to Washington, it turned out there was a position open as the deputy commander for the Air Support Operations Group, which was just perfect, right in my wheelhouse. And so I moved into that, became a dual status technician. And then I told my wife, okay, this is a 5-year thing. I can get promoted, retire as a colonel. And 11 years later, ended up retiring as a 1-star.
Yeah.
And so
5 years turns to 11 very quickly.
It did. She accused me of moving the goalposts, but it was a great career and the culmination of finishing my career here with the family that I developed in the Guard, getting to be a group, a wing, and then the state commander, and just the relationships it was fantastic. And honestly, now, like walking back in the building here, this is the first time I've been in Building 1 for, I think, 5 years.
Yeah, it's been a while.
And seeing people who were majors and captains that are now colonels and generals that I was able to help invest a little bit in over the years, it does my heart good.
I think last time you were in service, I probably had just been promoted to major, and now I've been a lieutenant colonel for a little while.
You were a baby major, and you were Captain Seamandell when we first started working together. So yeah, you're all grown up. It's good to see.
It's pretty funny. I mean, now I'm in command of a battalion. It's kind of just crazy how time flies.
It is awesome.
So I always like to ask, how'd you learn about the Guard? How was that thing that brought you to the Guard?
Yeah, like I mentioned, we actually worked with the ASOC during some of the Cascade exercises with 1st Corps. At that time, the 111th was aligned with 1st Corps, like they wore the 1st Corps patch and kind of like the 81st Brigade did for a while there. And so when I was on the Corps ALO staff, Air Liaison Officer staff, we worked a couple exercises together, and I got to know these people. And I was really impressed, even at that time. We're talking 97 at this point. That the Guard really wasn't as evolved as it is now, but this group of professionals in the 111th, they knew their business. And I was just fascinated. Coming through the academy, you're really taught that if you don't do 20 years of active duty, you're a quitter. You're bailing on your responsibility if you don't go full career. And I really saw the other side of that these citizen airmen were really good at their jobs, but also brought some skills from outside, from the other employment. And I really just enjoyed working around that. And so always had that guard thing in the back of my brain. And then when I went to the reserves, that was largely family. I was a single dad at the time. And the reserves, particularly that job in the reserves, was a great way that I could raise my kids. I had full custody and still continue to serve.
Yeah.
And then the guard extension, by then, you know, by the time I came up here, I'd gotten remarried, added a couple kids to the mix. So, you know, our family of four, it was still a great opportunity for my family to be stable and stay in one place. My kids went to the same schools. They only went to two schools or two school districts in their entire life, which I challenged many other brigadier generals that, you know, their kids probably had to move every 18 months and, you know, dad's away for a year on a deployment or a remote. I just didn't have to do that. And it worked out great for my family.
Yeah. And that's kind of the stability of the guard, right? You're always going to be able to serve at home, live at home. Yeah. You don't have to leave. Your family's not going to get uprooted. So,
absolutely.
So you were able to retire in 2020. I believe, 2020 is when you kind of you retired.
Yep.
The years just kind of start rolling together at some point.
Almost 5 years.
But you were able to kind of transition into a civilian career here in Washington. You didn't even have to leave the state. So what did you end up doing after you left active service?
Well, funny story. I wasn't planning on leaving. I was planning on sticking around. And a guy from Alaska Airlines named Max Tidwell called me. Max, for those who don't know Max was my chief when I was a wing commander. And then again, when I was the commander of the Air Guard here, Max is my senior enlisted leader. And Max had gotten hired in 2018 as the VP of safety at Alaska. And I remember like 2 or 3 months into his tenure there was when the Q400, unauthorized takeoff, I think is the appropriate term for that. But the guy took the Q400 and so that was Max's introduction to the airline world. And so he called me and said, hey, there's a job here I think you want to take a look at. And I'm like, I don't know. And I looked at it and then talked with my wife about, you know, what the benefits would look like, the travel. We love to travel. She's like, you know, I think you should look into it. I think it's and kind of it's my turn to help shape your career. And fair enough. And so I looked into it. And I started there in October. Ironically, the only time I was a drill status guardsman was my last 3 months from October through December of 2019. And then, I started with Alaska as the head of security, which kind of a big job, and I didn't know much about the airlines, but it was one of the better ways that I could use my experience. Yeah. At least I understood security, and I could learn all the airline specific stuff. But a lot of it was people and regulations and all that stuff we deal with around here. And then I'm 4 months into that, and COVID hits. I remember it was February 29th, that leap year day,
and everything changed.
Everything fell apart, and we called everybody. It was a Saturday. We called everybody in. We started this core emergency operations center, and immediately, like within the first 2 hours, we were beyond the playbook that Alaska had for pandemic.
Yeah.
And it really became, how do you take ambiguity and uncertainty and figure out enough to make a decision? And I can't tell you how many times I use Colin Powell's phrase of when you have 80% of the information, it's time to make a decision.
Yeah.
And so those skills that I learned throughout doing MDMP with the Army, building packages for fighters, being a forward air controller, all those skills of taking chaos and trying to make some order out of it and then executing and going with, you know, a 80% plan now executed violently is better than a perfect plan tomorrow. All those things really helped me succeed and helped Alaska succeed over the next really 6 months, where we got into the rhythm of, hey, here's what we do with COVID. Here's how we keep our employees safe. Here's how we keep the business running while keeping our employees and guests safe. All of that, just willingness to make a decision. There were a lot of people that were kind of paralyzed around us. And so when people like Max and were able to step out and say, okay, I'm not 100% sure, but I think this is the best way to do it. It really paid off for us.
Yeah, and Alaska was one of our go-to. It's always one of our go-to airlines. But I remember flying during the pandemic. They were quick to, hey, whatever you guys need as customers, we're going to just figure it out together. So that's probably a lot of what you guys were figuring out on the fly.
Right. And another thing that I really appreciate about Alaska, and it's very much aligned with our military ethos, is the idea of integrity. It's probably the best run company that I've ever been associated with. Not that other airlines aren't good, but the idea that we would do something wrong or try and pull something over on our guests is just anathema to Alaska leaders, and really all the way down to Alaska frontline employees. Yeah. You know, the focus on safety is unwavering, and we're willing to cancel flights to do it. And so when COVID hit, you know, the integrity piece of us, one of our core values is to do the right thing. And so the integrity piece said, we're not going to fly airplanes if it's not safe. So let's do the research and figure out where we are. We actually had a doctor from the University of Washington who's like a nationally renowned epidemiologist. And we had him on speed dial. We brought him in for meetings and all that to help us craft a policy where we could still operate, but we could do it safely. And so the net result, we didn't have a single employee, active employee, die of COVID during the entire pandemic. Which is astounding, you know, when you look at the national rates. So very, very pleased with what we were able to be able to do. And we were able to do it in a manner that I feel good about myself when I look at in the mirror.
Yeah. So about 3 years ago, you transitioned out of Alaska, Maine, Alaska, but Alaska still owned. It's still part of, you know, Horizon is still part of the greater Alaska Airlines.
Yeah.
And now you're the managing director of safety. So what's that all entail?
So it's an awesome job. And I went from 23,000 employee Alaska to 3,400 employee Horizon. And actually, one of the questions the president of Horizon asked me in my interview process, because I was on a track, I would have been a managing director, vice president, whatever, you know, kind of what I wanted to do. He said, why would you give that up to come over to Horizon and you know, maybe dead end your career? And I'm like, well, I love the Alaska. I love the mission. I love the culture, but I can affect the culture more in a smaller organization. And so in many ways, it was kind of like going from active duty to the guard, that you go from this big behemoth organization that's slower to respond and it's harder to get that cultural message throughout, to a smaller organization where you know who the influencers are. You can reach out to somebody and go, hey, we're having trouble with this. Can you help? And they're always willing to dive on the ball, whether it's one of the check pilots or a lead ramp agent or somebody in the maintenance hangar. You know, you figure out who those influencers are and you really develop a relationship. And so Horizon is a great company. And honestly, when I first started with Horizon, I had a misperception of a regional airline. I thought it was the junior varsity of the big boys, and the only people that would stick around there were misfits. And I got there and found out that's absolutely not the case. There are some people that are so dedicated. Like, as a matter of fact, Monday, I get to fly with our number one bid pilot, the most senior pilot. He's retiring in January of next year when he hits 65. But he's been with the company almost as long as the company's been around. He's like 39 years with the company. And so there are people that just love that smaller company feel. They love flying to Pocatello instead of JFK. Mm-hmm. They just love the mission and they love the people they work with. And so I've found a great home there. It's also analogous to the Guard in that it's smaller without all the resources. So we tend to be pretty scrappy, and you also get a chance to do a lot more. You know, there's typically most positions are only one deep. And so there's an opportunity to learn and grow and, always do something different.
Well, and you're getting to fly too.
And they let me fly the $20 million Embraer E-175, which is a beautifully designed airplane. I used to laugh I was a fighter pilot, so I used to laugh at airline pilots. And now it's a lot of fun. I really enjoy it. Maybe that I'm, 57 instead of 27 now, but... that part of the mission is really fulfilling. And that's kind of like, if you're a commander and you're out with your unit on drill, you're probably not adding a lot of combat power to your unit. You're not a trigger puller, but you understand what they're going through, and you have those conversations that you wouldn't have in the office or on an email. And that, for me, that's the thing. I get a good crusty captain at cruise for a couple hours.
Yeah.
And after he gets over the fact that I'm a management guy, then he's like, okay, let me tell you what's really wrong with the company.
I was going to say, you're probably hearing it from a different
standpoint. Absolutely. And flight attendants aren't shy. They'll tell me what I should be working on to fix, to make their lives better, make the operation safer. I actually carry a little notebook that I've written, things that piss people off on the cover. And that's my book that when somebody says, hey, either why is this and I don't have an answer for them, or hey, we should do this, I write it down and I try and get back to them on it. So it's a great way to stay connected with the operation.
Yeah. So you've kind of already, touched on it, but how have you found like going from, being in the Guard or serving in the Guard to now just being in the civilian capacity? How did that being in the Guard almost help move you into that field?
Well, like I talked about earlier, the courage, I guess, to stand up and make a decision. That was I was surprised at how rare a commodity that was at times. And The other thing I think that really helped me prepare was just I can roll with a lot of stuff. You know, we've been through things in our career. My highs and lows, like yours, yeah, are probably significantly higher and lower than, you know, some of the people that around me. And so it was actually really easy to sort of be the rock in a sea of turmoil, mm-hmm, particularly in a time of crisis. And, you know, COVID isn't the only crisis. The airline industry is very dynamic. Like, we get a winter storm here in Seattle. Yeah. It's a total disruption to the operation. As a matter of fact, I think I'd been at Horizon for about 2 weeks. We had a massive snowstorm. And I grabbed my winter kit, and I'm going out to the airport. I'm out on the ramp, and the president of the company beat me out there. And he was already out there with a snow shovel and some ice.
Oh, wow.
Helping keep the ramp clear so we could have our guests get on the airplanes safely. So that, you know, rolling up your sleeves and doing things, being biased towards action, I think really set me up for success as well. And then just the ability, it's interesting because I went from being a strategic leader,
yeah,
where most of my time was in the, you know, making speeches, doing ceremonies, but also going to Malaysia and Thailand or going to the Pentagon or yeah, all that. And my job now is basically like a major staff officer. You know, I actually have to produce stuff. So in a way, I kind of walked my career back, but I could do tactical work with a strategic perspective.
Yeah.
I could understand and help my teams understand that what we do here, here's how it impacts layers above us, and particularly when I was in security. And even more so now in safety. My team understands how what we do supports a much, much larger effort, helps them stay engaged. But, I mean, it's odd because I went from, I think here I had a staff of 25 over in the White, yeah, House there, 2,200-person organization. I got to Alaska, and I had 7 people on my team entirely. But I really imparted to them, we 7 are responsible for the 23,000 employees, yeah, at Horizon and 3,400, 23 at Alaska, 34 at Horizon. So, then I moved to Horizon, got a promotion, now I only have 5 on my team. So I keep working my way. Maybe I'll be the president.
Maybe you'll be the president of one person.
One direct report. Yeah,
that's how it works.
Pretty nice.
Any tips for those that are transitioning, right? You know, every year, you know, you've got tons of folks that transition either off full time, they either come to the guard or people just leaving the guard in general. Any tips that you have that you'd want to pass on?
Yeah, I don't want to be indelicate, but I think one of the things I learned was, what got you to be successful in the military may not be as valued in the next arena as it is here. People thought it was cool that I'm a veteran, and most of them don't understand anything that I did. Mm-hmm. I do have A-10 pictures and a picture of me in Afghanistan kitted up and all that. So it's kind of a novelty, but that didn't get me the job, and that doesn't make me successful in the job. You know, the people skills that I learned, the organizational skills, the communication that I learned in the military has helped make me successful. But I had to take a big step back and learn their business. And I saw a really good LinkedIn article the other day about somebody saying, you know, would you, if you were hiring for a brigade commander, would you pull a guy in from Microsoft that had never been in the military? And so it's the same thing. I think sometimes people, as they transition, they've heard stories of, you know, doubling their pay and just all these huge perks, and they step right into a C-suite job. And that just doesn't happen a lot of times. Yeah. It might happen in something that's very similar to what they're doing now. But for those of us, you know, who are heavy machine operators in the Air Force, you know, running airplanes or a mechanic or something like that, it's not necessarily a one-to-one correlation. You need to learn the environment and spend a lot of time, be very humble. I probably botched that a little bit going in initially, and then fortunately had some good mentors that said, pump your brakes a little bit. This is a really complex environment.
Yeah.
Let me help you learn it. And so I spent, you know, most of my first few months just understanding the lingo, because, you know, I from the Air Force, I speak fluent HUA, so I understood joint terminology. But then going to the airlines, and any civilian job is going to have its own language, yeah, that it took a while to learn.
And their own acronyms and everything.
Absolutely.
Else that they use.
And just their own way of doing business. And so, you know, the big advice would be humble, be in an absolute learning mode, contribute where you can, but also don't be afraid to say, I don't understand that. Can you explain it to me? I was fortunate. I found a guy who was still a serving Marine reservist, and I'm nodding my head in meetings like I understand what's going on. And then I grabbed him, and it's like my first or second week. I grab him and I go, there's a whole page of acronyms I don't understand. Can you help me? And he stepped me through it. So yeah, try and find that person that's going to help you understand the environment you're in.
Yeah. Obviously, you know, you've been out for almost 5 years now.
Yeah.
What are some of the things you just miss about the Guard?
You know, I miss the people. I love my people at Horizon, and it's a similar mindset, but it's not quite the same, you know? And so the not only the specific people that I got to work with day to day like you, but even just the general ethos of, you know, the people, why they show up for work is different here. And so I definitely miss that. Can't tell you I miss getting up early on Saturday and Sunday mornings once a month, but I do miss the coming together of drill. That's the thing about an airline. We're so scattered. You know, I'm lucky if I see maybe the same captain in every 6 months.
Yeah.
But, you know, here you get to bring everybody together. It's like a big family reunion once a month. And so you have the unit that you can really bond and communicate and grow. And honestly, I just miss the significance of what we did. I love being in the airline business, but at the end of the day, it's a business as opposed to really the higher calling of military service. So those are probably the top three.
Yeah. I kind of my last question, and this kind of wraps up, any kind of wisdom you want to impart to those younger officers and enlisted members that are listening, you know, that from your kind of time that you just want to pass along?
Man, where do I start with that? Because there's so much I didn't know when I was at that stage. As a matter of fact, I've started working with one of our development programs. It's a 6-month take these junior employees that are just below the manager level and help them grow skills to eventually get them into the executive ranks. And I started talking to one guy about something that I probably learned 20 years ago in my career. And I'm getting the dog watching TV. He has no idea the perspective that I'm looking at this from. And so I had to step back. Okay, what did I know when I was at his stage of my career? And so I think the big advice would be get good at your job, but also always be looking up and out. You know, figure out how your job helps or interacts with the person beside you, and then how your organization supports or is supported by the other organizations, so that when you go into a meeting, particularly I really learned this as a lieutenant colonel with then Lieutenant Colonel Gent Welsh. He and I were DETCOs and deputy commanders of, I was the Air Support Operations Group. He was the, what at the time was the communication group, 252, whatever they were back
242.
Then. No, it was 252.
Oh, did they group. See that group? And then
before they were a cyber group, they were, they were all combat comm. Anyway, our bosses hated each other. And I was supposed to go into a budget meeting and just tube everything that he was putting on the table, everything he was asking for. And instead, we kind of started looking at each other going, I think I understand where you're coming from on this. And then we said, this would work better if we worked together. And it took getting out of my own little foxhole and understanding his needs, his requirements, his constraints. And both of us had a lot of similarity in what we were trying to get accomplished. How do we help each other out? How do we partner? So getting outside of your own little shell and understanding more about the bigger environment, in my mind, that's the key to opening the door to senior leadership. A lot of 06 boards that I sat on, even 05 boards sometimes, we said, you're not ready because you're not thinking strategically. You're thinking at your tactical level. You're not even operational. You're just thinking about you, your little team, and how you want to get everything for them. Let's start thinking about how does what we do and what we ask for make the organization better as a whole.
So yeah, I think that's amazing advice, and we'll always carry on for anybody, right? I mean, everyone kind of thinks the same way, like, hey, let's think tactically, then operational, then strategic.
Right. Some people just get stuck at that tactical level, though. It's comfortable. You know what it is, and there's no risk in being good at your job tactically and trying to defend what you have, but you miss out on a whole bunch of opportunity to do more, to do bigger things.
Yeah. Anything else you want to throw out there?
No, come fly Alaska. It's it's honestly, it's a great airline. Other airlines are good as well, but it's the hometown, airline, the hometown company here. And I guess, you know, at some point, everybody's got to, I think Colin Powell said it, everybody's got to get off the train at some point. I never thought I would serve more than 30 years. I wasn't expecting to pin on major. And so the idea that I would retire as a brigadier general is just amazing. But it was just because people kept giving me chances, kept giving me opportunities. So as you are building your soldiers as a battalion commander, maybe look for those kids that didn't maybe get all the opportunities. And how do you build them up a little bit? How do you take a kid with a lot of rough edges and knock those edges off and make her a better soldier and a better person and a better leader?
Yeah, no, I appreciate that, sir. I think it's fantastic advice, and I appreciate you coming on. If you want to know more about Alaska Horizon, we can definitely put information in the notes, but I'm pretty sure we can always Google it. It's always out there. If you like the video, give it a like. If you want to watch more, subscribe to the channel. And sir, we appreciate you coming on.
Thanks for the chance, Joe. We'll see you.